100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by two extremely successful whitetail hunters who specialize in public land hunting, Johnny Stewart and Rendell Eric. We recorded this at Johnny's cabin in Pennsylvania, where we discuss categorizing your hunting spots, the best way to, or the best win to capitalize, the deer camp resurgence, Rendell's experience scouting with Johnny, areas with no oak trees, trail cameras, and much more. This conversation went extremely long, so we split this up into two parts. So you'll have to listen in next week for part two of this conversation. And on this week's Mountain Buck Monday Story of the Week, we have a story coming out of West Virginia from Ty Russell. So this story was actually written by his dad, Casey. And Casey wrote in, "We were hunting on public land in West Virginia when my 9-year-old son, Ty Russell, killed his first mountain buck. We put in 16 miles on mountain bikes and well over 12 miles of hiking some steep terrain spread over 4 days. We stayed in a cargo trailer in freezing temps each night and got up well before daylight to ride our bikes back as far as we could. And then we hiked 1 to 2 miles each morning just to get to where we would start hunting. We would sit for a couple of hours each morning and then still hunt our way to our evening spot where we would sit until dark and then start our trek back to the vehicle. There aren't many deer in this area, but there is a good chance that when you see one, it could be a nice buck. Ty passed on a spike on the first morning and on the first afternoon, took a tough shot on a super wide immature 4-point. The shot hit some brush and only grazed the buck. He was down in the dumps after we searched for blood for a long time, but he was ready to continue still hunting in a different area until dark. We continued hunting the same area for 3 more days, only seeing a handful of does, and on the last evening we had available to hunt, we decided to hike to an entirely different area, an area I hadn't been to in a couple of years. When we got to about a half mile from the spot that I'd picked out, we ran across a lot of fresh sign, and I had to convince Ty to hold up there instead of continuing to the spot we talked about going. Right away, I noticed a decent buck coming, and we started to get in a position to shoot. The only problem was that when I got up on my knees, I trapped Ty under my jacket. I had covered his legs when he was cold. I started to panic because he wasn't getting in a position to take the shot when he finally said, 'Dad, I can't.' I realized what was going on. I grabbed him by his collar and helped him pull him up from under my weight. We finally got him up on his knees and behind the scope of his 308 that was resting on a monopod. But in doing so, we got busted by the doe and soon after, the buck. I told Ty he would have to take a quartering two shot because the doe was already stomping and the buck was about to bolt. He aimed quickly and took a shot and dropped the buck in his tracks. He thought he had shot a 3 or 6 point and didn't realize what he had just done until we got about 30 yards from the buck. And then the happy jitters, as he called it, started to set in. He was so pumped to get his first nice buck and a mountain buck at that. He was so proud of all of his hard work and was already begging to go again before we even left the woods. Not many kids will keep pushing through all of what mountain hunting has to deal with. But this kid impressed me, and I even had to make him give me a break a couple times. I think I'd created a monster and couldn't be more proud of what he's accomplished with little to no complaining. I wouldn't trade this buck for all the bucks on my wall, a day neither of us will ever forget." Well, congratulations to both Ty for pulling the trigger and working super hard to get this buck, especially at such a young age, and Casey as a father for teaching him the ways. I mean, that is awesome and the pinnacle of hunting, in my opinion, right there. So congratulations, guys. Beautiful buck. Anybody wants to check that out, head over to East Meets West Hunt on Instagram or East Meets West Outdoors on Facebook. You can check out the photos of Ty's deer there. And if you want to submit your own story for Mountain Buck Monday, send it in via email to beau@eastmeetswesthunt.com and put in the subject line Mountain Buck Monday. Would love to be able to share it on a future episode. Just a short paragraph or two and some photos to go along with it. Would love to be able to share that. So thanks for everyone that's been submitting the story so far, and looking forward to sharing more. In other news, I'd mentioned it in the last episode, but I have the new EMW Deer Camp Nalgene bottles in 2 different colors, an olive and a brown color, that are available on the website. Super cool. Love this new design for the Nalgene bottles. And then also have a new Deer Camp shirt that is available there. It's a really cool, it's basically the same Deer Camp logo that's on the bottle, and then I've had on some other shirts, but placed on the front, and just an all white, super cool, and then just the new logo really small up on the back of the shirt there. So that's, I'm excited to get those released there. And then there's some other products and updated Rut Stash shirt and a whole bunch of stuff there. And just a reminder that all proceeds here in Q1 of 2024, or I guess not all proceeds, 3% of sales go to Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management, donating that money to them to help in the fight for the future of our hunting. And with that being said, just a reminder again, this is a two-part episode, so tune in next week for the second part of it. But if you like this podcast, it's helped you out, please share it with friends, family, anyone that you think would benefit from listening. Do a lot of social media posting about the podcast and all these different things and ways of marketing it to people to listen to it. But there's nothing that beats word of mouth and the trust that it gets from you guys that have found success from listening to this. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And if you would give it a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just subscribe on YouTube, leave a comment. Really appreciate hearing from all of you and the support thus far. So with that said, I hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week. I'm joined back again with an old familiar face of the podcast, the Johnny Stewart at Johnny's Camp, and then a new face to, at least to this podcast, and old Rendell Eric that I met just here, well, I guess about a week ago.
Yeah, so, man.
And awesome. now you're spending time at the camp here in Pennsylvania. I mean,
yeah, I love it here. Blessed to be here.
I'm sure you probably, you know, being here just for, you know, the Great American Outdoor Show, and then here now you're like, you know, I'm just gonna move from Iowa to Pennsylvania to hunt deer.
Dude, I love it here.
Is that how you're feeling?
Oh, man, it's just like millions of acres I can roam on here. Way different than Iowa. Iowa, I'm driving 2-3 hours to hunt sometimes, and here it's just untapped wilderness. Yeah, back here,
I can't get 15 minutes away from like one spot because it's like you find all kind of sign right, you know, anywhere, and there's good deer everywhere.
And you know, it's funny because we were talking about it a little bit beforehand, but I was like, man, I'm getting to this point again where I've got too many spots and I, you know, I want to go here. I want to check this out. I want to do that. And, you know, and that's kind of the nature of it. It's just trying to, you know, figure that out and see what you want to do with it. And Johnny brought up a good point with that, which we can get into that in a little bit, but basically about just kind of categorizing your spots for the time of year and then splitting it up that way, because I definitely have places that are good late season, that are better early season, than my rut spots that you just know those are going to be, you know, pretty good for that.
So then you factor in the wind and you're losing spots.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, for sure.
Divide them up. Just keep chopping it up. Yeah. Everything could be overwhelming if you look at it as a whole.
Yeah.
You just got to take one little chunk at a time. So just divide, like, you know, yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I got all my spots categorized by what wind I need to hunt them on, and that makes it easier for me to decide. And then I got them broken down by time of the year that I need to be there.
No, that's such a good, you know, it's funny because I don't feel like a lot of people do that to that level as far as breaking that stuff down. But for me, if I have, it's not exactly the same, but I have a hunt plan, as I call it, that I build out, that I have, you know, say I have five main areas, and then I break it down into, okay, here are four or five spots within these bigger areas. And then I have, you know, the wind direction kind of down, when it's good to be able to hunt that, the time of year, when it makes sense. And then, so then when the season's coming and you're in it, and all of a sudden you get this east wind that you weren't thinking of and you've been struggling for the last week, I can go look at that plan and have a little bit more of a clear mind and not think so much with emotion of, I'm struggling, and you kind of look at it, you're like, okay, I can, you know, check out this spot and see if this is hot now or whatever.
Yeah, I love an east wind. Kill wind's what I call it.
You call it, why is that?
Because a lot of the mature bucks don't really have a bed for that wind where I live at, because it's so uncommon. Mm-hmm. So it throws them off their game a lot where I'm at, and it kind of puts a chink in their armor. So they tend to bed on, like, I don't know, like a north wind bed on an east wind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I let you slip in there close to them.
Interesting. I like that. I like that thought process. I like when people think of things just like that normally people would look at as a detriment. And it's like, no, that's an advantage.
You know,
like,
for sure.
Or like windy days, you know, how many times, you know, you like windy days for certain. You're like, oh, the bucks are up moving around because they're worried about getting hit by branches and they can't hear and they're losing some of their senses there. And, you know, Zach Fahrenbaugh was talking to me. He's like, I love windy days. That means I can get on the ground and go. Mm-hmm. And it's just looking at, you know, every
situation. Makes the deer nervous because their senses are dulled
Yeah.
one way or another, and they can't use them to their ability like they usually do. And I think they just move a lot. They can't hear it. They're just frantic.
Yeah.
Especially when a tree's, like in a winter, trees are cracking and blowing. That's when I would be in the woods.
Yeah, and like I'm more of a bedding area type hunter, so that allows me to slide in really close. Or it overrides a lot of the thermals, so you can make some plays on some areas you normally couldn't.
And your scent don't lay in an area. It just gets blows it all around.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it's funny because, you know, when you talked about the thermals and the wind, it's so hard to know exactly what mile per hour wind is going to overtake them unless you learn an area specifically, you know. Because I had a listener ask me, he's like, what mile per hour wind does it take to overrun thermals? I'm like, well, it depends on the elevation. That depends on the temperature of the water. What?
Oh, I was laughing. I was telling him a story about the Spartan Forge cyber AI thing I was trying out.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah, I put that exact question in there when Bill told me to try it out.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Did it give you an answer? Yeah. Not really.
I don't think Bill liked my grade, but
he said a C.
It did have a lot of good info, and it talked about. I was surprised the information that it did give me.
Yeah. No, the thing is impressive. But the thing is, like, a question like that, I don't even know if there is a solid answer for
it. No, it broke it down and told me all the wind speeds, when the thermals arise. It went really in-depth. Like, I was really impressed with it. Because I was kind of messing with Bill with my grade. Because I was like, holy, dude, I was like, man, I can't believe it. Like, it broke everything down, like the thermals versus the wind and terrain types and when thermals are doing what. So I was, like, really impressed by that.
Yeah. And for anybody that's listening, I don't know if that, I mean, it was supposed to be out by the time this goes out, but as with anything, it might.
He said maybe 4 weeks, so six weeks.
Sorry,
so
8 weeks.
No. It doesn't matter. We can tease about it. I mean, he was showing it at the outdoor show,
but
the Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge, but I won't talk a whole lot more about that on here yet. But I wanted to, before we get too far into deer hunting, because I know we're going to go down some rabbit holes there. Randall, I just want to give you, if you'd mind giving a brief background on who you are and, you know, what makes you tick.
So my name is Randall Eric. I live in Iowa. My dad was a Marine, so I lived all over the South and some other states growing up. I wasn't raised as a hunter. My dad was a fisherman. I taught myself how to hunt, taught myself how to shoot a bow. And I started, like, whitetail hunting in my early 20s, just ate up with it. Moved all the way to Iowa because I just wanted to hunt, man. Just love it. I didn't care about anything.
Have you shot any good buck?
Oh, yeah, I've shot a bunch of really big buck.
Nice. That's what I wanted
I don't
to
want
hear.
To gloat. I don't want to seem like I got
Well, that's what I wanted to
Thanks,
hear.
John.
Yeah, I shot a bunch of big bucks.
Things are just facts, Randall. That's not
gloating. I've shot a lot of public land booners.
A lot of, here it is, public land, too. Booners.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah. You don't got any.
There's not too many people that can say
I'm just taking my headset off. I'm going to go drink beer over here by myself. I'm going to sit by the fire and sulk with my beer. You can talk to Randall.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, I've shot a lot of public land booners.
Yeah. You know?
It's one thing, I shot a lot of public land bucks. And that's awesome.
Yeah, I've been blessed for sure. I hunt really unique style of hunting. I didn't know any better. I just taught myself how to hunt.
Yeah.
I kind of like got down the rabbit hole, like all the big TV stuff and DVDs. And I found out, like, I don't know, you just can't compete with that. It's not, in my opinion, it's not realistic.
Yeah.
Like for the everyday hunter.
That's kind of like when I grew up, I read every magazine article. And then I found like in my, you know, we're talking 25 years ago and it's like even longer, 30, you know, and it took me the wrong direction. It wasn't practical for where I hunted. So I, the same as Randall, was self-taught, like my teens up and through my 20s. I guess maybe my teacher was the deer, you know, just follow them and learn. And so
just hunting, man.
And then you having your own mind or your own, you know, way that you live in your life, you have your own take on what the deer are teaching you.
Yeah.
Where it's, you might be like this a little bit and I see it this way. You know, and then, but a lot of guys are like that. They have their own take on how they see things, but they all come together if we're good killers like this. You know what I mean?
We all got things in common.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because I'm like, man, I think a lot like that guy does or this guy.
Yeah.
And there might be a few things different, but there's a lot of things that are always like in common. which is pretty interesting. But I think it helped me out because I'm just open-minded. Like, I'm not, you got to do it this way or that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that tradition in the hunting family. Like, you know, your dad's like, this is the way we hunt. This mm-hmm. is the way you got to do it. Man, I was just out there, dude. I didn't even know what the heck I was doing.
And what I say is, like, if you got a lot of experience, that means you made a lot of mistakes to get there. And once you learn from them, and that's where I was. I still do things wrong, you know?
Yeah, failure is your best teacher. Yeah. Like, if the moment you think you know everything, you might as well hang it up, man.
Yeah.
I'm always learning. I'm reading books, listening to podcasts, watching whatever, talking to guys like Johnny, scout. I like to scout with people because I'm watching, and I'm not even scouting. Like, I'll just watch what he's doing and talk to him and see how he's reading the woods and stuff. And then I kind of do the same thing, and I could just compare notes. Like, oh, like today he missed a couple things.
What?
I'm just giving him crap.
You know, I just wanted a new guy. Well, I left little tidbits along, little crumbs for him to pick up.
Little breadcrumbs. Yeah. To make him feel
I was testing him.
Some little saltines.
You're like, this guy from Iowa, you know, I gotta help him out.
I'm going to see if he sees this buck bed over here. And he just kept his mouth shut. I said, he didn't see it.
Oh, I was laying right in it. Bedtime stories.
Bedtime stories. But it's nice going with, like, Rendell. Like, we drove on a couple different mountains, and then, you know, I just dumb it down on drainages and this and that. And he's like me. He's aware of situational awareness. Like, he knows where he's at.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think we get along. We're a lot, I don't know if it's simple, you know, dumb it down and look at the basics. And this is really, I mean, you got a lot going on in between to blur your vision. But, like, I got a couple of drains, just runs, just here's a point, you know, and he's right with me on, like, where are we? Where, you know, like, I could tell he's like, he would be the same here as me or you, like, if he hunted here, you know, he's knowledgeable about his surroundings and what deer need and terrain and where he's at. And it's, you know, it's nice to be around people that are similar like that, that can, you know, and then help you along the ways where he has a little, I'd be here. Like he said today, as we saw a spot, he said, I'd probably, you know, I kind of explain where this deer in the early season was hanging and telling him, yeah. He's like, oh yeah. And it's not like he gave me his opinion. Not just like, John, you know it all, I do know a lot about the area, but, and I always said that anybody, like I took my girlfriend hunting one time and I said, where do you want to hunt? She looked at me like, what do you mean? I said, you want to hunt up on a hill or down by the creek? Like, people are like, you're the big deer hunter. I said, I don't know, maybe the deer will be thirsty, needs a drink of water. Maybe that's where you think it's hot, man. You go for a while, I would be down there by the creek, you know. And I'm worrying about thermals and bullshit up on a hill, and she's down there shooting a deer, you know what I mean?
It's like the guy that rolls out in the rut on a bucket and kills a 200.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't even think about it, man. That's where I think we overcomplicate it way too
much. Yeah, that's another thing we talked about. It's great to talk to people in season, like how we talk to each other, your dad, and, you know, different guys that are all in the grind and learning and scouting, and you just overthink things. And, hey, look at my map here. Look at the app. You should be right there. What about, you know, when I do it with Jason sometimes, what about – you're thinking too much, man. You know where the deer's at. Just get in there. What if the just go hunt?
And that's where it helps, like having, you know, someone else to bounce off of. You know, like I do it all the time. But, you know, I'll ask Johnny something, and he'll be like, "You're overthinking this." And then like he'll just come to me, and he'll be like, "Should I go here or here?" And he lays out the situation, and he answered it in his own mind before he even. But you know, I'm looking at it clearly and not being attached to the situation, where it's easy to be like, yeah, you should probably, you know, go here. He's like, yeah, you know, that's a longer walk. That's probably why I was thinking in my head I didn't want to do that, you know. And I do the same stuff, so it's just.
Yeah, it was just like that buck that we were talking about today. I was just, this is what I would do, Johnny. Mm-hmm. Like, just simplifying it. Like, oh, if he's doing this, this is what I would do. And then you got an advantage by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to drive him around, like, just bounce stuff off each other, you know, as if you were hunting together, you know, someone that's knowledgeable in that field, you know.
Yeah, it is so much fun to scout with other people. When I first started scouting with Johnny, I was like, I loved it. It was just like following him around, was just a sponge, just like picking up on how he looks at the woods. And now I've taken some of those things to translate into my own strategy. Even though we might do things differently, I can pull a lot from what he does and add it to my own stuff. And it's pretty neat, you know. Like, for example, one time when we went out in the summer and him and I went out to 80 degrees and we were going to spend the whole day out there scouting. I hate summer scouting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's awful.
Hate it. And but we did it and we went out and we're all over and I was like, okay, there was a lot more that I was missing to summer scouting that he was picking up on that I just never even thought about. Now, it doesn't mean I want to do it anymore, but if I have to, you know, I've learned some things.
Oh. All right, let's hear it, Johnny.
Right.
Summer scouting tips. Let's go.
Well, you know, you got to go out on a cool day. Number one.
Have a cooler full of brewskis or what?
Yeah, and some tick spray.
Yeah. For methrin all over.
Methrin all tied up on you.
Nice.
Spray down with some Sawyers, some cold beer, and a cool day. Okay, any other tips?
Are you looking at licking branches or what?
I don't know, really. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
He's just roaming the woods. Yeah.
Plopping cameras. This looks random. Good. Yeah.
That buck.
My mind's not thinking about summer right now, so. Yeah, I don't know
that's
what
why
I'm
I asked you, because I know it was just going to.
Yeah, you're going to throw them off.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, like, for anybody that's listening, it's like, yeah. But you get Johnny in that moment doing that. And that's it's funny how different personalities work. And, you know, you always say this with work mode and hunt mode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you talk to you when you're working about hunting stuff, and you're kind of all over the place. But when you're in hunting season, you're all in, and that's all you're thinking about. And you bring up an excavator or even the smell of diesel, and you freak out.
Oh, yeah.
You're pissed about it.
Yeah, a guy asked me there a couple weeks ago when I was, like, going to Iowa, asked me about working. And I said, I just threw up my mouth a little bit, and it tasted better than the thought of running a machine.
It's deer season, baby. What else are you supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
But going back to Rendell, you were saying, we got down to a couple of tangents there, but just going back to what you were talking about with how you grew up deer hunting and scouting there, how long ago did you move to Iowa?
Like 13 years now.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved there. I didn't know anything, didn't know anybody. I actually lived in a tent for 6 months. Then I lived in this dilapidated fifth wheel. Like, you could see the sun through the fifth wheel cracks for 6 months until I got an apartment there.
Really?
Yeah, I was just, man, 100% all in, man. Like, yeah. Went there with nothing, just made it happen.
That is awesome. So that's kind of like you and you're living in your Jeep in Iowa and wherever else you go.
Like, when you're all in, you're going. Yeah. Like, when are you going to Iowa? Yeah, when you coming back? I'm going to shoot my deer. I mean, what the fuck? Whenever.
I never went back.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's that's probably why you guys get along so good.
Yeah, a lot of people wouldn't do that, man.
Yeah,
a lot of people are like, oh, it must be nice, or I wish I lived in Iowa.
Yeah,
what's stopping you, bro?
Yeah.
Like, pick it up, let's go. Oh yeah. My wife, whatever. All right, divorce her or make her move. Like,
yeah. Take her with you.
Yeah, something. And they're like, oh, my in-laws. I'm like, move them too.
Yeah,
like,
bring them all.
Talking about,
I need to get a bigger tent.
Yeah, I need a camera guy. Get your ass up here.
Yeah.
Oh, grandma will be your camera.
Hey, man, whatever works.
Good idea.
She won't be able to run any technology to drop my pens to anybody.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
That's hilarious. So are you so when you went out there, like, what did you do for work, or how did you get to the point now? I mean, you're running around now doing shows,
man. I did anything I could do for a job, all kinds of crazy stuff, third shift jobs. I went to college, got my agricultural business degree, did some of that. I owned my own landscaping company for a while. Then I became a teacher, like, the last 5 years I was a teacher.
Mm.
And then I broke out of that. Now I'm a manager for Osseo Gear Camouflage.
Awesome. That's super cool. And it's funny how that comes, you know, kind of full circle with you moving to Iowa because you're so passionate about deer hunting. And now, you know, working in an industry
that's crazy.
You love to do, you know, 13 years down the road. So.
Yeah, because I never set out to do any of this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know why I'm here, Johnny.
Yeah, I know.
How did I get here? Like, yeah. Every day I'm
this must be a dream.
Yeah.
Let me pinch you.
I'm in a tent somewhere sleeping right now in Iowa. I
have to pinch you.
Yeah.
You wake up. Fine.
Have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT
for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade Short Barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, I guess if someone might ask you, you think in 10 years you'll be sitting on a couch in mountains of PA after leaving, you're like being a camo guy. You're like,
never.
What? Who? Not me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought, Johnny Stewart, I thought you were like the coyote caller dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my uncle.
Oh, wasn't sweet.
Yeah.
That's how you got rich.
Yeah. I robbed him.
I don't blame you.
That's how everything Johnny has is just because he was, you know, he was born into it. Yeah. So he didn't work for it.
Man, I wish I had a rich daddy.
Yeah. Uncle.
Yeah, uncle, whatever, step uncle. Married an old 90-year-old, got her land, whatever.
Yeah. And from what I've learned about, I'd say a lot of people in the outdoor industry, I always thought like, oh man, you know, they must have a lot of money. A lot of times they don't.
No, yeah. It's not poor.
Yeah,
I'm still hunting public land.
Yeah,
yeah.
I got money in a bank, but it's running out.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I hunted for the last 5 months.
I hunted
when it's out. When I'm like, you know. Buzzers going off, then I start looking for work.
I hunted 3 months in November with $30. Don't know how I did it, but wow. I did it. I just hunted close to the house every day.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. See, again, right there, it's like you want it bad enough, you figure out how to do it.
Exactly.
I mean, what is valuable to you? Money isn't, to me, I don't know. Yeah, you have to have money, but it can control you. And, like, you can live for money, but then what does that buy you, you know, if you just...
It's, I mean, always,
what's
like,
it get you, really?
If you have a lot of money, you have no time.
Yeah.
If you have a bunch of money,
yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't have money, then you got a ton of time. It's all whatever.
You know, like, that is so wild to think about, because, like, I have always thought, like, oh, once you make enough money, you have all this money to do all these things you want. But typically what happens is you have to work really hard to get all of that money, and you're having businesses and doing this and that, and now you don't have any time, so you got to buy back your time by paying for experiences to be able to, you know.
Exactly.
It's just like a cycle, and depending on where you want to fall in that big whirlpool, you know.
Yeah, I'd rather do experience over being rich. That'd be me, because when you die, you can't take it with you.
No.
So I'm just going to smoke it now.
Yeah. Right.
And then if it comes down to it, you and Johnny can share a tent.
Yeah, man. Beef jerky, baby, all day. Yeah. Just get a whole pile of it. Whole trailer full.
Living in my Jeep eating beef jerky with no money in my pocket.
If you own a beef jerky company, you'd like to sponsor me and Johnny, just hit us up.
Hey, a lot of the shows, Jack Lynx has been there.
Baby.
Maybe we can get, you know, you guys be the poster childs for Jack Lynx.
Yeah, we can make it happen.
I got a good commercial. Well, Rendell is the Sasquatch, and I'll be down there trying to get my deer, and he come roar, like throw me out of the way, my deer.
That'd be awesome.
I'd be fighting him.
I do think
like the bear.
I do think it was funny when I saw that photo of you two when you were hunting in Iowa together. Because Rendell, you're so tall, and Johnny, you're not so tall.
Yeah,
I'm not short, just not so.
Yeah,
tall.
They made me stand on the downhill side.
Yeah. Trying to get a little height on him.
That would be tough to do.
He uses one stick,
and he just goes.
And he's 12 feet.
Yeah.
pretty much.
How tall are you? Six?
I'm like 6'7".
Okay. That's
6'7", 6'8". I used to be taller, but you know how you get older.
Yeah.
You do a bunch of dumb crap.
And I didn't know they stack shit that high.
Yeah, I didn't know either, man. I had to run some rebar through me to keep it from falling over.
Oh, my gosh.
To get in the heat, to harden the outside. It's like that cow shit, you know, where it's hard on the outside but still soft in the middle.
Yeah.
That's me.
Oh, that's funny. And then how did you two get to meet each other?
Man.
Just following each other on Instagram. Yeah.
And then I'm friends with Garrett Prawl.
Yeah.
And he always talks about you. Yeah, just... And then having the same friend circle and stuff.
Yeah, we met in Michigan.
Yeah, that Kalamazoo show. Deal. That
had
place
a couple
was a
beers.
Dump.
Yeah, that was a dump.
Yeah, that was bad.
I'll be going back this year.
Yeah, me, me too, baby.
You'll be there this year.
Yeah, dump. I will be there. It is a dump.
Yeah, then he's. Yeah, and then I got pulled an Iowa tag. I said, "Hey, I'm coming out your way," and he come down and hunted with me a day. After the big snowstorm coming, he come before the snowstorm, hunted. He ran to one of my spots because he was a couple hours north. And you know me, I'm like, go hunt one of my spots. I don't care. Yeah. You know, let's just hunt. Let's just hunt. And he seen a decent buck, and he headed home before the storm.
Yeah, I had a 190 show up.
Yeah, it wasn't.
So I was gone.
Oh, back home.
Yeah. Oh, back home, yeah.
Yeah, I was out. I'm like, sorry, dude. Peace.
Yeah.
I loved hanging out with you, but I love this deer a little more.
Yeah, dude. That thing was a monster.
He was
dude.
Huge.
Really? Yeah, man. I got the deer camp vibes going on right now, though.
Yeah.
That's dope.
No, this is it. This is what we do. And the thing about, like, you're talking about podcasts and doing so many of them, it's funny, you know, I've done 350 at the point
of
doing this. And it's like, you know, do you ever get bored of it? And I do get bored of like certain things of talking over and over again about certain things, but I don't get bored of just like sitting here and talking about it. And, you know, the tactics and stuff flow out. And that's why I really like doing these ones in person so much more than when I do the remote ones. Like, that's just the nature of it, because I am not at the point where I'm Joe Rogan and can fly people in, you know, to be able to do that. Yeah. But
that would be dope.
That would be cool one day. But at the same time, it's just like, I love talking just with like-minded people and just hanging out. And it's so much fun. Did you have any, I mean, I know you said that, you know, you didn't grow up in a hunting family, but did you ever have like a deer camp atmosphere anywhere, Rendell?
Never, man. I went on like 5 deer camps this year just because that was my goal, man. I just wanted to hit these deer camps because it's like a lost art. They're dying out like all over the country. So I went to like 5 of them this year and had a blast.
What were they like? Like as far, I mean, define it or.
Yeah. I mean, I almost think it's harder.
Camping more like tent camping?
No, it was like Airbnb style.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not tent, but that's like deer camp, like a whole group of guys
together. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 10. The 15 dudes in one camp.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's like the lost art of deer camp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just like blessed to experience that before it like dies out.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, you know, try to revive it.
Yeah.
Just by doing like, you know, you invited me out here, and man. Everybody's telling me you're not going to hunt PA, dude. But I would come out here just to damn hunt for the deer camp vibes.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Like, and it's all in perspective, like we were talking about. Like a 130 here is like a 180 in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I roll out here and shoot an 8-year-old 130 mountain buck.
Yeah,
dude,
200
like
some pound, big
stuff.
Old.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'll have to be doing the Conor McGregor walk out there, boy. But yeah, so I went to all these deer camps. I feel like it's almost harder to kill because you're just hanging out, bullshitting, telling stories, you know, and you're, I feel like, and I'm just helping everybody else out because I'm more like the guy that I'd rather see you succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I put more effort in like helping everyone else out. Like, oh man, I seen a community scrape here and a buck was here. I probably wouldn't shoot that buck, but I'll send you in there.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm looking for that giant. I don't know. I tend to hunt older bucks, you know, the giant deer.
Yeah.
Which is pretty tough on a hunt like that, but I still just suck it up and eat tag soup if I have to.
Yeah, and you learn more just from that area. Yeah. You go and shoot one the first day, you're done always.
Yeah, and I want to experience.
Yeah.
Like when I went to Indiana, I rolled in half a day, did a bunch of speed scouting out of the vehicle. I looked on Spartan Forge, And I was like, oh, man, it looks like an old clear cut right there. I bet you there's a bedding area in there. Mm-hmm. And then I drove up, standing corn, dude. And, man, I got wood like that. And I tore through there with the saddle, dude. I'm ripping corn stalks out. They're all over me, dude. Like, I'm turning and burning, baby, because I was running out of daylight.
Yeah.
I flew back there. I set up like 8 foot off the ground. And I had a buck come out 20 minutes, man. He rolled up like 10 yards. And I'm full draw on him, just watching him. And I was like, yeah, I got you, baby. And then he wasn't big enough, so I just let him go. Like, I felt like checkmate.
Yeah, you want
so that. Even though I didn't kill him and have the gripping grins and all that stuff, like, I still won that battle. But like he said, dude, it was more like an Iowa setup. It was, you know, on ag, more flatter ground. I wanted to go out in the national forest, dude. And I mean, I was climbing drainages for 2 hours, dude, every morning, hitting all these saddles and drains. Dude, I had a blast, mm-hmm. man. I was hunting these rock bluffs on the lake. It was awesome, dude. So even though I could have killed...
Yeah,
man, I just had the experience, and that's what I love as I'm getting older.
Yeah, different areas and shit.
Like, I already been, you know, I already killed a bunch of big bucks, you know, whatever. Even, you know, I mean, that's not everything.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to experience stuff, travel new terrain. It's like a test to me, like, oh, I rolled in Indiana, different terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Definitely.
And then the last day, I mean, I was on this mega mass buck. He rolled in. I was just out of range. So I was like, oh, I'm good with that. You know, I ate tag soup, but it was awesome, dude. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, you know, and I just listened, actually. It was Michael Waddell talking on a podcast. I don't remember. I actually listened to him on both the Hunter podcast and Cameron Haynes' podcast. Sweet. And he was talking. I don't remember which one he said it on, but he said, you know, there's, you know, you'll have the guys that are out there and they will kill the biggest bucks out there, but they've become so focused on that thing and not experiencing it with anybody. It's like, you know, they're sitting there by themselves with a cigar and bourbon looking at their dusty bucks that are up on the wall versus being able to have some experiences with people and talk about it and you know, cut up with everybody and have that kind of experience. And, you know, I want to make, I want all of it.
Dude, I want it all, baby.
I want it all.
Like, man, I got to meet a lot of great dudes and made a lot of great friendships, even people I was kind of like, and then you meet them and you're like, oh, okay, well, this is awesome, dude. You know, I got the room with some guys. Like, for 2 weeks, I don't know if you know him, Jonathan Moreland, Arkansas longbow, big buck killer. I roomed with him, and he showed up late to camp, so he didn't have an option for a bed. So he said he walked in the room, and he just seen these giant-ass boots on the bed, and he was like, holy crap, because I wear size 16s, you know? So he was like, man, who's in my room? But, man, now we're great buddies, man. Like, I did the Arkansas show, like, a couple weeks ago. He came up to the show, and, man, I might even go down there and do some turkey hunt with him. So it's just amazing, dude, the friendships that hunting happens through that community.
Yeah.
And that's just being open-minded, being willing to share. Like, some people are like all about themselves. They'll just want to hoard it all, man. Or it's kind of like Jared from the Hunter podcast talks about, you know, if you got a thousand peanut M&Ms, I'm way more likely to give some to Johnny. But if you only got like five, hell no, you ain't getting nothing, Johnny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of that analogy. I mean, that doesn't really make sense, but it does in a way.
Yeah. No, I've grown up in the deer camp culture side of it. So I look for that anywhere I can go and having that experience. And I do like when I go out west, I love going out by myself and hunting and doing that. And even like most of the time for whitetails, like it is a solo endeavor as far as bow hunting whitetails here, but I like coming back and getting to share those stories of people and bounce ideas off of and going back and forth. And it's really been, and I've mentioned it on here a bunch of times, but it's a goal of mine to revive that deer camp culture. And I know it's not, I mean, it's harder to own property and to have a camp and then, you know, the upkeep of it. And then if you're doing it with a bunch of buddies, you know, sometimes some people pull their weight and others don't. And there's always like, you know, those feuds side of it. But I mean, now there's not really an excuse. You have Airbnbs. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I bought one and turned it into one is because I was like, here's an option for people to come rent. And, you know, they don't have to do that upkeep. They don't need to take care of the grass and the roof that's leaking.
Even like campgrounds, man.
Like, and campgrounds, you know.
I've had so many guys reach out like the last year about, and they're starting up, man, all these public land little deer camps. Like, oh, we're going to hunt this for a week.
Yeah.
Come out if you want so you could show up. There's like 5 to 10 dudes and you're just running out. That's kind of what I like. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be a mom or a dad or a babysitter to somebody, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be with them in the woods and I'm like holding their hand and all that like I was Johnny today. Yeah. When you're scouting.
I can see it.
Yeah. You know, I was
like
carrying
my dad. He's 6'7" and I'm 5 foot.
Yeah, we were going through that.
Come on, son. All right.
Man, he took me through this boulder field and he made me carry him on my back, man. I was like, good Lord, dude.
I couldn't make it out.
Yeah, damn diva, bro. You know, I like that whole you just show up to deer camp. Man, we just collab. Oh, I seen a buck here. What about this?
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And you just split out, you know, go your own way kind of thing. Come back.
I look forward to like being up here and everybody, like when we got 8-10 guys, whether Bo's coming down to camp or we go to his camp, like I can't wait to get out of the woods to go see everybody and talk awesome. And drink a beer. And it's like, you know, it's just as important as the hunting itself. Like I know we talked about it, Bo, it's just like, wish we could just freeze this day in time, you know, whether it's November 4th and you got a cold front and you're at camp and everybody's there and we're meeting tonight. It's like, and there's guys in that you ain't seen in, you know, months and you're all on the same page and it's go like, your ways. And
it's like that magic, man. It's just in the air. It's like November. You're smelling that rut.
Yeah.
You just smell all that tarsal gland.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what deer camp vibes are like, man.
Yeah.
It's just magic, dude.
And like, it's funny. So Rendell, like the way I met Johnny and I said, I still don't remember. I think we met through Instagram.
Oh, okay.
We met in the woods. Like, I mean, like, but 8-9 years ago. It might have been almost 10 years ago.
Probably about 10 years ago.
And you know, that's why I just saw this guy that posted a picture.
And I was holding his hand walking
through. I saw a picture of a guy with a bunch of sheds on top of a Jeep that I thought I recognized the background. And I was like,
hot spot.
Who's this guy? You know what I mean? And, anyways, so, you know, when we had met and then I brought him to my family's deer camp and it only took one time of him hanging there with my family that the next time I go over, he's there and I didn't even invite him. He's hanging out and he's helping my, you know, my uncle's young daughter track a doe and he's there with my grandpa and they're drinking on the porch. And I was just like, fit in right together. Like that we've grown up together. Only thank God
great,
I didn't.
Great dude, man.
Yeah.
It's you're very good. Giving. I will say that inviting me up, dude, like you're just, no problems like me being here, you having me to come hunt here, nothing, dude. Like a lot of guys aren't like that anymore. I appreciate that.
No, Johnny's as giving as it gets on that front. I mean, he's helped me a ton of times and I've learned so much and just you never need to do anything. When I went down to Ohio, he's like, I'll go stay at my camp and do whatever. And he's just like, pretty good guy.
Even when he came out to Iowa, man, I was jacked, dude.
Yeah,
I was like, I just was like, I'm going to learn so much because I feel like he's like the tracking machine. Like if there's snow deer tracks, like he's the dude that I would want with me if we're tracking anything.
Yeah.
So I was like just pumped about it. I was like, oh, there's snow. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to learn a ton. And he was right, man. He's like, oh, that buck will be doing this and that. And then I roll up right in there and I'm like, oh, there they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, it was cool.
You just got to be careful, though, giving him too many compliments. The problem is that doorway is only so wide, and his head's got to fit through it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He's too tiny for that. He'll be all right. He's like a micro machine.
A micro machine. I can imagine that you'd be able to, with your stride, cover some serious ground, Rendell.
Dude, I was going so slow, man. And I was
You got a bum knee. I don't know if you mentioned it.
Yeah, I sprained my knee at the show in Harrisburg.
Oh, you did that at the show?
Yeah, and I pounded through 9 days of the show with a sprained knee. I only sat down, 30 minutes at the show all week. And then now I'm up here climbing damn mountains with Johnny.
Well, yeah.
Carrying him through boulder fields.
He had texted me, I think it was last night. He's like, hey, Rendell's coming up in the morning. I don't know if we're going to hike around much. You know, Rendell's got a bum knee. And then I find out you guys went out in the woods and he took you up over a hill and through some boulder fields. And yeah. everything else.
It's not bad. I mean, it was a little eh, but
It was a little dicier than I remembered it. Oh, yeah. You know,
it was kind of wet.
Some ditches and some boulders and shit.
Yeah, some big ass rocks.
Yeah.
I kept up, man. I'm tough, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just that guy. Like, man, I just don't want to be a pussy, you know? I'm just going to go through it and just deal with it.
Yeah. No, did you? So what did you pick up on today, or what did you think about? Like, have you hunted areas that look similar to this? Or
yeah, like, my grandparents had a farm in like West Virginia.
Okay,
it's just out in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of by like Winchester, Virginia. If you drove west into West Virginia,
yep.
So I'm kind of like running around. I didn't hunt there, but just running through the mountains and stuff. I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm just familiar with it.
Yeah,
even like some places in Iowa. Kind of like that. Yeah. And I've been in Ohio quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it didn't seem like mountains at all, you know? I was thinking something different. Mm-hmm. But he even said it was more like kind of flat. So
this area is kind of gradual.
I wasn't really surprised. And I thought actually where I hunted in Indiana was way steeper than here. Man, that was tough. And it was way thicker in Indiana, too.
Well, the thing about like Pennsylvania specifically, and it's like that with a lot of states, but you can go, you know, 10 miles one direction and all of a sudden it's straight up and down and super steep. And then you go 10 miles this way and it's pretty flat and gradual. And then you go here and it's kind of a mixture and more hill country. And it's just, there's such a variety of terrain and landscape that it's,
what I
it's
really learned cool. was just mostly about like plant types.
Yeah.
What the deer are feeding on, what they're doing.
The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
Forestry practices, I had no clue about. I still thought they were doing clear cuts. I'm an idiot. Guess not.
Oh, you mean as far as doing that?
Yeah, I thought they were
herbicide spray.
And then he explained a lot of stuff into that. I don't know if he wants me to give away any secrets, but
yeah, we keep it under the hat.
Yeah. So
Bo has Kenny on a lot.
Yeah,
our buddy that, what's his title, Forster. And,
yeah.
So I mean, what he was saying, I was watching it, and it made a lot of sense. What the deer were doing in relation to that.
Yeah.
And then like bedding stuff, I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like hill country, you know, mountain stuff, kind of already knew what the deer kind of be bedded in.
Yeah.
But just the like vegetation types and the forestry practices I really learned, picked up on.
And that helps like knowing Kenny and understanding that stuff to, you know, plan for the future. You know, when you see them doing something, okay, I know what's going on here. I know what's coming next.
Yeah. What really blew me away, no oak trees, man.
Yeah.
What the hell? That's wild.
And yeah, that depends on the area, too. Yeah. It's just like there's areas that are full of oak trees, and there's areas that just don't have any. And I typically, I say it all the time, but I like areas that have no oak trees for the rut because historical sign is repeatable because it's browse.
Yeah.
So you're not worried about, okay, it's a mass crop this year, but not next year. And they're migrating to different, they're going to be doing the same thing.
It's almost like crop rotation in Iowa.
Yeah.
I'll have a giant on corn and then the next year it'll be beans and he won't be there because they just don't, beans are already done before Iowa even opens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you lose that horizontal cover. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's so like we were talking earlier about like I have areas for early season and late season that have a lot of, you know, oaks are what I try to find for those times of year. But the rut, most of the time I'm not in areas with oaks. Not that I won't be. If there's a buck I want to hunt, then I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
But like if my most perfect scenario would be, you know, like finding that kind of food early, but during the rut, finding those areas that don't have that. There might be a bunch of clear cuts and browse and briars and, you know, young trees that are growing up mixed with some old growth. And then, you know, just kind of breaking that up my spots depending on the time of year. And that's the one thing I do hate when I get obsessed with a specific deer, because there's certain times of the year that I just struggle with figuring it out. It's just tough. Like I don't know what this deer is doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually on a Pacific deer early, then once it gets loosey-goosey towards the rut, I just bail. Just go hunt.
Yeah.
Then maybe circle back late season, but by that time they're usually out of their they're in their winter range, and it's probably usually in Iowa. It's not even on public, so it's like,
yeah,
you just got to go find. It's like three phases I'm looking for new deer, so it's like I'm constantly just going, and like that's where you're in season scouting and stuff, or historical data, like leaving your cameras out all season.
Yeah,
and then noticing that, like, oh, this buck showed up, that 190, he showed up 2 years in a row, only late season, never any other time. So I was like, there's no point in even messing with that deer because he's not going to be there.
Yeah.
So you might as well go whatever instead of obsessing on that buck. But late season rolls around and you still got a tag, you know, then you need to get on that one and dump off the other ones you were worried about.
Yeah. I mean, you remember when that buck I was hunting a couple years ago that I had no idea where he was early on. And I told you, I was like, it's my goal to figure out where he is early. And you're like, why? You're like, just. You know what he's doing later. Yeah. And the problem was I was going to West Virginia the week that he would show up. Yeah, and I was like trying to figure him out before that. And I just, and as Johnny told me after he got killed by somebody else in gun season, he's like, yeah, Bo, like I believe in you. And I believe you weren't going to kill that deer. I was like, oh, thanks, buddy. <That's probably true. laughs> I appreciate that.
I remember when I first met Bo, he was hunting that big deer.
Hercules.
Oh man, naming deer too.
Yeah, good Lord. I haven't named a deer since Hercules.
What was he, 6'8", somewhere in that range?
Oh, me too.
And he was telling me he was so obsessed or so focused on this deer, and he would show me kind of where he was living, and there was no mast and no terrain.
Yeah, it was a flatter area, swampy
and vast, and interesting. Like where he gets them, I just feel like he was so nomadic and could lay anywhere in that area. And I was listening to him, I'm like behind him 110%, but then I walk away, I'm like, he's not.
Hey, you know, I did shoot him once.
Oh,
I hit him in the brisket.
Yeah, the year the earlier.
The first year, before, once I knew more, I knew nothing, really.
I got you.
But,
I'll never forget, like, I'm like, chances are he's never going to see that deer. It's going to, it's like, you know, but I'm like, you know.
Man, what a great buddy.
No, but I was supporting him the whole way.
He never told me this until after.
Oh, but it's like one of those deer. Sometimes once you learn a deer.
Yeah.
This thing's hard to kill.
Oh man, I
or
got
some
a
of them are
like that.
You know, they're like, oh, I got this guy down pat, and I need to go after him. And like, it was one of those deer that were old and wise, and he lived nomadically, and he was in a place that was hard to kill. And my man Bo was, he gave it all, you know. But
man, you can learn a lot from those bucks, though.
Yeah, you do, and and that's another thing where you say at the end of the season, you got a tag, but you've gained so much intel from him, and you can use it down the road.
And a lot
on other
more anxiety.
Yeah. You know, this year I hunted what I believe is his grandson.
Oh, sweet.
That has the same frame and everything. And this deer isn't as big as he was. Hercules was about 170 at his biggest point, and probably 160 when I shot him. But that deer had, like, I learned enough about him to know that I probably shouldn't have hunted this other deer this year so hard because it was all. But I also one thing I did learn and why I did hunt him this year was there was a black cherry crop, which when there's black cherry crops, he was around in early October. And I was like, okay, now that was something I learned at too late. By the time I checked those cameras, it was too late. But this year, the buck that I was hunting, I was out of state at the time when he was showing up, and I had, I put a cell camera in the area, and doesn't get cell service, but the Exodus Rivals or AT&T, and that just gets enough service in this one spot on the one scrape. And he was showing up about once a week, you know, right before dark, hitting this spot. And then, you know, and then I never ended up, I was just, you know, a hair behind him every time that I tried. And I'm pretty sure he came out one evening at dark and worked another scrape just up above me in this cut, and then worked off. And I did see him October 30th, and then never saw him again, and never had a camera picture of him again. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah,
but
I feel like the cameras, man, I'm always behind when I'm running them.
Yeah,
like when you got a picture of that buck, you should have been there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, this year, mid October, I like fuck these cameras. I'm pulling them all. Yeah. I know what's here, and I had like as we can maybe dive into is like. It's this time of year. I know where I need to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not chasing one individual animal. It's like, I know there's good deer in the area. I'm pulling them and I'm just going to hunt. You know, you can get caught up in being behind them. You know, maybe he's telling you he's in an area. Might be, to where it'll help you. But I feel like if you're a good enough hunter, you already know that.
Yeah, they're going to burn you quick. The cameras will.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you start chasing them, chasing the cameras. And that's where cell cameras, I think, are probably a disadvantage for me personally, because I get caught up in, and as much as I can sit here and say, like, you know, don't chase the cameras, it's hard not to sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, everybody does it.
Everybody does it. But the thing I like and why I still will continue to run cameras is if I can just leave them out, like I just went and pulled a bunch that I hadn't checked since October and the beginning of October, and I learned so much about like certain time frames and, you know, I do log all of that data, and I have a spreadsheet of I always log the does when from mid-October through November, so I know where they're hanging out at, and then the bucks that I'm looking at. Now I can look back at that the following year and try to beat them to that camera. You know?
I watch the does a lot. I mean, I don't think a lot of guys key in on this, but I look for, like, because when a doe's starting to come in heat, like, even in the picture, you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
So I log that, like, this doe comes in a week before any other doe does, so I'm going to be there that week.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'll get a mature buck that just randomly shows up, like, a week way ahead of the rut, and you're like, what the hell? Like, he looks like he's ruddy, you know, and you're just like, and then you're like, oh, the doe. And then that's key to know, because the mature deer is like, man, he's first in that game.
Yeah.
So you might be on the rut a week before anybody else does, so keying in on those estrus does. And then I got a lot of pictures the last couple of years of, like, man, just does laying by these primary scrapes.
Yes, yes.
So I got into this thing. I don't even know if it's true or not. So you can hate me if you want on this. Call me out. But, like, when they come in heat, it's almost like they go to the scrape because they know the bucks are coming and checking that so they can find it. The buck can find the doe easier.
Yeah.
She'll just go, like, I'm ready. You know what I mean? It's like if you showed up at home and there's just a gal spread out, you know, just raring to go. I feel like the doe does the same thing on the scrape.
She's ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I know I noticed that a few years ago. I might take you to a spot tomorrow where this scrape I had, where I told you about this 170, it's been 6-8 years, but he was 150 and then 100, and it was like this doe kept showing up. It was like maybe the 21st. And that's when them bucks showed up, like they, you know, she would definitely.
Yeah.
It's not often, I guess it's not often I think that I see that, but when you do, you want to be in that area maybe the following year if you're like behind it, because chances are that doe's going to be there again.
I even got like bucks bedding in the scrape, like when they, I don't know, man, it's like they're waiting to catch the doe. So they're just going to bed right down in the scrape.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy because I only noticed that like during close to the rut, these bucks starting to bed right down. I mean, mock scrapes that I'm making and does are hitting it. Like they're just bedding right in it.
Well, and I know, so anyone listening to this has heard me say this before, but my biggest thing, like the one thing that I do believe that cell cameras do help with this is, or just even if you had them out, but learning that is if I see a doe in the middle of the night lay down next to a scrape or in the scrape, that next day is going to be wild.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's just, they're, like you said, I think they're just like, I'm ready here, boys. I'm at the local watering hole. I'm waiting for 2 a.m. to go home. So,
Yeah, let's get it.
Let's do this. And I think that is like, is such an underutilized tool, just being able to look at that. And that's what I mean about even looking at the, you know, logging the pictures or at least remembering, or however you do best with being able to keep track of that stuff. You know, Johnny keeps it in his head where I need to have it written down, or otherwise I forget.
Yeah, you'll forget.
So I need to have to know where those spots are. So when it's like, okay, October 21st, you know, it's about to break out, but maybe there was a time when I had a doe that was laying next to the scraper or whatever to go back and get in there and try to beat that.
And then I even add, man, get yarn and I split it and I tie it to the
wind
branch so I can look at to see exactly what the wind's doing. And then I compare it to what the camera's telling me the wind is. Or like if I look up the weather app,
yeah.
I'm like, oh,
yeah.
It's a north wind, but the yarn's telling me it's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So the wind's only like 3 mile an hour. I'll say, okay, the thermals are doing this right there. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning the spot without even being there, so I don't have to wind map it in person.
So that's a really good tool to be able to use. I like the idea of the yarn. So I heard of people using like different colored things and stuff to hang, and I was always worried about people then seeing the set. But one thing that I was doing, but it takes a little bit more wind to make it actually work, is taking orange ribbon, because they use that for forestry. And it's just like,
yeah,
it's
that
not,
makes sense.
You
that
know,
sense.
Tying that around a branch, because it's like you can see it. But the thing is, it takes a little bit more wind than something like you're saying about fraying a piece of yarn.
If you cut that and made it a lot skinnier, it'd take a lot less wind to move that.
I could just cut the
yeah, just like slice it in half, man, and then tie it. Then it doesn't take as much wind to move it. Lighten her up.
I feel like an idiot.
Oh, it's all good, man. It's
just Troy Pottinger does that. I know. Yeah. I talked to him about.
Yeah, out there, I think he has some type of tree.
That's the
old man's beard.
Yeah, and he usually sees it in this picture and stuff.
Yeah,
I said, Troy, I ain't got it out here. Just get some yarn.
No, he should just send us a bunch of it.
Old man's beard. Yeah.
Troy, send us some old man's beard.
Yeah. Exactly.
And a big buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a couple big
one
bucks.
Of your big bucks. Yeah. And them 170s.
Ship it. FedEx.
Yeah. I mean, that would be nice.
The thing that I noticed you absolutely do not want to do with the cell cam, and I'm telling this from experience, and this sounds dumb, but going in season scout, man, just mega hot sign, dude. Monster scrape, rubs everywhere. Let's put the damn camera up and see how big this deer is.
Just hunt it.
And then he comes in there next morning, just huge monster buck. And guess what? He smelled your ass.
Time is now.
Never get pictures of him ever again.
Yeah.
So instead of doing that, you should sit that damn spot. And then if nothing shows up, put the damn camera up there.
Yeah. Take the camera with you while you're sitting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do not hang the camera first.
Don't just rely on that camera. Yeah. You got that hot-ass sign.
It's true, man.
I did that this year. Yes. I did it. That's why I'm like, I'm an idiot. But
I'm
I
helping
remember,
everybody out.
I was like, this scrape is giant. I probably even sent a picture of Johnny along there. I'm like, oh, my God.
I'm going to put a camera on it. See
what's
there.
I'm going to put a camera.
Laughing like,
and I thought, I'm like, well, I've been here already, so I already left my scent behind.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go down over this hill where I haven't been. I'm going to sit there and then right at dark as I'm coming back up over the hill. He was right outside the scrape, and I'm like, you got
me. You could have killed him right when he smelled you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
just sit the damn spot.
You know, hindsight's 20/20, but you're just like, that was so.
We're overcomplicating it. We need to just go back to simple hunting.
Yep.
If it makes sense in your head, this is what, I mean, it's not rocket science, you know? It's like, okay, early bed to food. And you got to kill them somewhere in between. You know what I mean? If you see the sign, set the sign.
You can, like up in this area, you could really you can get overwhelmed with all the area. But let's concentrate it down to where, you know, he has to be feeding some type of cover, thermal cover or terrain. Like, he needs all of that. And I always say that a deer, a big mature deer, the big fat ass, is so efficient. He has everything right there.
Yeah.
And when I was taking Rendell around, I said, he's up here tonight, Rendell, but he's right. And I, when I found this spot in the summer, into the fall, I said, he's here.
Yeah.
You know, and where's the easiest place for him to lay, have water? Them couple of spots that said where the springs, summertime, you got water, thermals fall, he goes up, all the food's up around here. He's right here. You know, and the deer, it'll be on my channel this year, that YouTube we're going to put out, where I didn't have no picture of that big wide one, how he moved down the hollow. And I'm like describing, we've come up the stream, you know, hour before dark. I said, we need the thermals to pull down to the creek. And he's here. Like, I'm describing where he's at. And I have my closest camera is 500 yards away.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm just like speculating or drawing conclusions. And so like we went up the stream, up the hill, and the whole time on camera, I'm like, he's laying right up there. Like, I have no clue. I had no camera. I never even stepped. I was earlier in the summer. I hate that. And I put that in the back of my brain, you know, like, I feel like that's some dead logs and some saplings and this and that. And it wasn't cut there. And so, and we got set up and, you know, the thermals end up, we're going down the hill for sure. But for some reason, I kept dropping in floaters the whole time I'm in a tree. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And out on the hillside where I thought he'd be coming from, we heard a cough and, you know, I didn't hear it because the camera, I can't hear where the shit. And he said, I heard a deer cough. And usually them big deer, most of the time when I hear a deer cough, it's a big deer.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I agree.
Yeah. So then I was dropping flowers and went right to him. And he, 10 seconds, and he went up just random. You know, as much as you know the thermals are falling, who knows? Just went to him and he ran. But like in that situation, you can, and if you go across the hollow or up the hollow, there's vast hunks of land. Like, I mean, this deer could literally, and I do sometimes get caught up in being like, this deer could be anywhere. And then that's like the guy on his shoulder. And then the guy on his shoulder is like, no, John, he's not anywhere. He's not just anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, everything he needs is, you know, he's there for a reason. But yeah. This guy's like, no, he could be, look at his forest, miles of forest. He could be anywhere. And then I get torn by that. You know what I mean? Like, man, struggling in my head, you know?
Johnny went down. Johnny with devil horns on one shoulder.
Yeah. I was just doing it. I was like, Johnny went down to Georgia.
But then you like you step back and wild. You're like, but after so many years, start
it's
saying
instincts.
It's going with this guy. Like, he's not just anywhere.
Yeah.
Everything is right here at his disposal. He's efficient at getting to it. He has this bluff that he's hiding down behind. There's cover. There's water. He's need to put on weight. This is time to feed. Like, he's right here. And, and that's another thing. Like we said, we can get caught up in all the stuff that's going on, all the land that's here. But, you know, you get into areas and they
– it's just pockets.
They have what they – they have what they need real close. They're going to find that spot, whether they're close to the does, close to the food, close to the, everything's right there. Not saying it could be randomly in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And I think, you know
– there's a rhyme and reason for everything.
Yeah, there is. And but there is also times like in these big areas with the vast amount of wilderness and – not gradual terrain and not concentrations of food, you will catch them just like this moving through. But it might be like he ends up over here and he wants to go to this spot. Yeah. And he just goes that way. Maybe that's a pocket, like as Rendell said, over here that he's going to get to. And then he's maybe at this pocket. Then, you know, how he's getting to them different areas you might not know, and he might be browsing along the way and maybe checking a random, oh, I've seen doe down in here, but it's in pockets or the area that has everything right there, and he's in the right, like what I found this year, he was right in the mix of everything he had at his disposal. Then once I bumped him, and the next day I tried setting up before light, I think I bumped him, I heard a snort, and I was like I dropped cameras for days, I never seen a hide or hair of them since, you know.
Yeah, so. Some of those big old bucks are flighty, man. You got one chance, and then they're toast.
Yeah.
And then, like he was saying, I don't know, they're just kind of lazy. Like, the older you get,
you're right,
the more efficient. Like, I'm going to – even, like, the cabin, you pick your way through it. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to go out of my way to swing around all this crap, you know. I'm going to go this way. But, like he was saying, on the mature deer – I think if you're going to hunt mature deer, you need to scout for mature deer, and that's all you focus on. Get all the other deer out of your head.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn if I see does, young bucks, nothing. I don't even want to see them. If I'm seeing them, I'm probably not hunting the right spot. Because it's like a grandpa, you know? Everybody's up here having a hoot.
He's by himself.
And he's in the basement watching football in a rocker sleeping.
Watching Fox News bitching about things.
And when I get... and I scouted so many beds over the last, I don't even know, many years, just learning beds. That's all I look for postseason. I just go look at bedding areas. And there, you got to dictate, it's the bed where you look at it and you're just like, this is impossible. You got that bed. That's the one you need to focus on. That's probably where he's going to be. When he was driving me around the day, he took me by like a couple bucks he was talking about, and I was like, holy shit, man. Like, I don't even want to hunt here because there ain't no way you're killing this deer, dude.
Yeah.
Like, with the wind, like he said, that one busted him. Like, they move so efficient with the wind. Everything's in their favor. it's just like you got to, man, you got to have that one chink in the armor, and it might be.
That's it. You got
one day where you have that, yeah. Like the east wind. I might get one day I got that east wind. You got to make it count. Or, you know, yeah. You get a high pressure and it changes the thermals, or some kind of storm system comes in and it's doing a little different with the thermals, and there's a chink right there. I mean, you need to be in the woods that day ready to strike.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just different. Like, it's just a different class of animal, you know?
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.